So if you could be here around 9, that would be great. Okay?
Well, listen here.
Hello, and welcome to Love After Lockup. Haha, okay. I'm Miss H, and today Mr. O and I will be talking about Life After Lockup, episode 2 of 4. This week, Angela hears out Tony, although she has a new guy Ross on the brain. Tennyson gets introduced to California with weed and shootings. Sarah goes to therapy and freaks out on Michael. Brittany and Marcelino leave Grandma to babysit. And Lacey and Shane play house and contemplate another child. If you like what you hear, please support us by subscribing and leave a 5-star rating, or any other constructive comments are welcome. And if you watch 90 Day Fiancé, check out our other podcast channel, 90 Day MK, Teachable Moments with Miss H and Mr. O. Thanks, stay safe, and enjoy.
Hello, Miss H.
Hello, Mr. O.
How are things going?
Things are going pretty good. I feel like we're kind of getting into a rhythm of things here.
Right, and aren't they're going to mess up your rhythm next week, right?
Yeah, well, the end of this week. Yes, yeah. Exactly. Start in person this week. So speaking of COVID, we finally get to the point where things are starting to shut down.
Right, in the show.
Yes. So why don't we start off with Brittany and Marcelino? So quarantine is happening, and Brittany is supervising a renovation of their yard, which is costing $25,000. Brittany is frustrated about their space because they are trapped in the house and she just wants more of it. She wants to buy a bigger house, but Marcelino has spent all the money on this renovation without consulting Brittany about the money. Brittany is bothered by the fact that Marcelino keeps making decisions like this, like he's still a bachelor. Cindy, Brittany's mom, comes over to help take care of the kids while Brittany and Marcelino get a chance to get out of the house. Brittany tells us that Marcelino gave Cindy an ultimatum that it was either the grandbabies or alcohol, so Cindy has been somewhat successful in her recovery so far. Brittany and Marcelino go to the Vegas Strip as a date night, and Marcelino risks going out despite his asthma. Brittany and Marcelino get home to Nicole, Brittany's sister, and she tells them that Cindy just kind of dipped out. They suspect that she went to get a drink because she's been slipping, since she hasn't been able to attend her AA meetings, which are now virtual. Nicole also believes that Cindy has been stealing money from her, and she thinks that Cindy has taken her debit card. Brittany suspects that her mom is doing more than just drinking. All right, so Brittany and Marcelino trusted Cindy with their kids. Would you ever trust a former addict with your children, even if they are in recovery?
I wouldn't say never, but she seems to be way too soon into recovery, mm-hmm. right, for this to happen. Like, if it, you know, if they had been in recovery for like 10 years,
sure.
you know, something like that, and they had shown me small steps along the way that they're capable of handling this. Because that's a lot to give somebody who is A, in recovery, B, still has to go regularly to meetings to maintain their recovery,
mm-hmm.
and to throw a lot of kids at them during the pandemic and the quarantine is a lot, is a lot.
But yeah, definitely like kind of the mental health, I think that's starting to come out now. Like people are concerned about everybody's mental health during all of this. And it's like thinking about how people cope with mental health stuff, you know, issues and just challenges in their life. And it just seems like this is probably a really difficult time for addicts in general, because it's like, how do you cope with having these like feelings of depression and anxiety, because like everything seems to be turned upside down. It's like alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think that anybody who doesn't have some level of depression or anxiety like creeping up on them now these days. Right.
Yeah.
And so, but that's the way she's always dealt with her things, especially I don't understand, since the mom called the sister in, mm-hmm. right? I guess it seems to me the ideal situation would have been to have them tag teaming it from the beginning.
Right? Yes, right. That especially if, and I know they're trying to maybe show her that they trust her, and they uh-huh. think, you know, maybe that'll help her with her recovery. Like, oh, we're like trusting you to do this kind of big thing. Like, you know, this is important. Like, why don't you prove to us? But yeah, I definitely agree. Like, why couldn't they just have called Nicole from the very beginning and then had a backup there in case something went wrong?
Right. Yeah. I mean, but right. Because I totally get where Marcelino is coming from with the ultimatum, right? Mm-hmm. But it's your grandkids or the alcohol. We're not putting them both. Cause I would not put my kids through that at all. Right. I was like, no, they're not going to see this. And if you're going to do this, then you're going to be out of their lives. Cause I'm not going to expose my kids to that.
Right.
So it made a lot of sense. And it seemed like, you know, and it's definitely one of those things where Brittany was already on board with him. It's not like it was Marcelino's ultimatum and he's doing it on everybody. Like, she was equally – I mean, she was hot at the end of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. I just kind of feel like, how did it escalate, right? Because obviously Cindy got there and she was sober, right? Because Brittany and Marcelino would never leave someone who's, you know, under the influence of something with their kids. Or I would think they would kind of know better. Right. And it's like, how do you go from I'm sober taking care of my kids to, oh my God, I need a drink so bad that I need to call someone in so I can leave.
Call someone in and then steal their debit card.
Right.
So I can leave. So, I mean, and that's where I think Brittany's right. I think it's more than just alcohol that's going on here. Once you're to the point where stealing money, that's not typically something you associate with alcohol addiction.
Right. Right.
People to the point where they're stealing stuff. But yeah, because – and the thing is like they kind of – and I think we've seen it because they said, oh, she's been slipping.
Yeah.
Like she's not – I think they've been kind of turning a blind eye to some evidence and some stuff that's been going on.
Right, because that's the thing is like she's been slipping, then I don't know. Does this surprise you? And maybe you shouldn't have trusted her with the kids.
Right, right. So all right, to change gears, yes. I'm going to say this because this drove me mad. I get that Marcelino has asthma, which is a, you know, aggravating condition for COVID, and he definitely wants to avoid – I want to avoid having it. I don't have any aggravating conditions.
Right.
Totally get it.
Sure.
Right? But he was like – the thing that he said, he was like, oh, you know what? Not only I have asthma, I'm in the older crowd. He is 41. I am not ready to acknowledge
– you're in the older crowd.
Because I can see that age from where I stand.
Right, right. Yeah, I'm going to go with the asthma. Because I was going to say my sister's husband, he's 41 and he has asthma. And it's actually kind of funny because I feel like everybody in the family is super paranoid that he'll get it. But I feel like he's less concerned than everybody else. So he was like dying because he just wanted to go to Costco. That was like his thing. I mean, pre-pandemic, he's the kind of guy that just like hangs out at Costco for like an hour every weekend, you know, just to, even though he doesn't need anything, he just wants to see what's there, you know. And so it was kind of funny because he went without Costco for 4 months. And then finally, he just kind of told my sister, he's like, I'm going to Costco. And he was there for like 4 hours. And my sister's like, where are you?
That's excessive. Yeah.
I had to see all the things. I told you I was at Costco. She's like, 4 hours.
You don't even know what you get at Costco for 4 hours. And you're right. Yeah, they're right. Because people who go to Costco and don't actually buy anything. Now there's people who go to Costco also with like a train of carts that they come through.
Oh my gosh.
That definitely takes 4 hours.
Oh, he went crazy at Costco in that 4 hour trip. Like he came back and my sister's like, he bought me a new computer? Like, what happened? She's like, I needed one, I guess, but we hadn't even talked about this, and it comes up with
right.
a computer.
All right. So speaking of spending things without discussing it first.
Yeah. $25,000 is an excessive amount for your backyard. What are you doing back there? Are you installing a pool?
So most likely it seemed like they had a lot of like landscaping done and leveling and stuff like that. That adds up really fast.
Okay.
Right. Because it looked like they pretty much – well, I don't know because they're in Vegas, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's those certain neighborhoods in Vegas, in Phoenix, where people still insist on having like green grass, right? And so
well,
that's going
to be tough to maintain then too. Like you're not even just talking about $25,000 to put it in, but then to maintain that.
To maintain that. But then people do that and they get like irrigation systems put in and automated sprinkler systems and stuff like that to do it. Right. So if they have to tear up the ground, put all that in, grade everything out, put it back down, like it can get pretty pricey. And I know a lot of people, you know, my understanding is a lot of people are starting to kind of turn the corner on that. And they're just like, I don't know, whatever. I'll just let some cactuses grow here.
Right. Like stones and- that's actually really funny. Now that we're kind of talking about this, Marcelino's really reminding me of my brother-in-law, because him and my sister have recently, he did a kind of a backyard renovation thing with the irrigation system and the retainer walls and all of that. And she was just like, okay, well, you're spending your money on this renovation. So right. They're lucky enough where they kind of like have shared money, and then it's like your money and my money.
Sure, but I know. But even like things like putting in like a patio, like if you get a nice patio with that, you know, you do it and they have the pavers and the benches that people say don't get. People see building those all the time. Those just alone can cost $10,000 or $12,000.
Yeah,
like it's crazy.
But I think like the problem here, and I agree with Brittany, is that Marcelino sees it as his money. And so he makes decisions about his money. But at the same time, he is in a family, and Brittany is doing her part to, like, you know, raise the kids. And it really frustrates me. You see this a lot of times with, like, I feel like younger couples that, like, this happens with too, where you have, like, the stay-at-home mom. And it's almost like because the partner that's working, they feel like they have the power to make all the financial decisions because they do see it as their money, but they're a family unit. And so it's like he can't just make these decisions on his own. They affect his family.
Yeah, because, I mean, even if you're the only one working, the only reason you can work the hours you work is because that other person is home all the time. So you can't think of it as your money. But even like, he took out a home equity loan for this.
Yeah.
Like, which is like, if you're trying to upgrade your house, that seems like the worst time to take out a home equity loan.
Oh, God.
Like, you're going to need that equity
for the next house. He probably was like, the interest rates are really great right now. Why don't I just do this now?
Interest rates are really great right now. Yeah. He was just under the impression that, and I'm a big cynic when it comes to anything financial, right? The idea that he's going to put $25,000 into this yard and it's going to like raise the cost of the house by $30,000. So he's going to make money doing this.
Yeah, but even still, that's like only $5,000. Like that's not.
Oh, I don't. I never believe that any kind of upgrade actually adds, because no matter what you do, right? At least maybe it's just because where I am. Like the price of the house is the location. Like that's what people are paying for. You could have the greatest lawn in the world. You could have a crappy lawn. The difference in house prices, like I could show you dilapidated houses that are only selling for $20,000 less than like grand palaces because they're in the right school district. So I was never convinced that you're going to make your money back on this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a factor in that.
All right. So let's hit our other COVID couple, really. Mm-hmm. And that is Angela and Tony. So Angela's still ranting and raving and waving the bat around from last week. But then she does throw it on the ground and then sit down. Her and Tony both light up cigarettes. I think they're the cigarettes that Tony bought her as a present. And Angela yells at him for loving his addiction more than he loves himself even. Tony tries to tell her that he's been good and in a hotel room for 4 months, and that this separation for the past 4 months has been the worst punishment he could imagine. Worse than jail, even. He says he lost the best thing that ever happened to him, and now his head is on straight. He needs her to let him know when he's being a dumbass, because she's the only one that can do that. Angela says that even though she knows all about mental health and counseling, Tony's problems are his, and she does not feel sorry for him at all. But at this point in the conversation, she kind of gets out of angry mode and just shifts into counselor mode for a bit. Then they have a little bit of a therapy session before she breaks the news to him that she never actually filed the marriage license. So technically, they aren't actually married. Angela can't think of one reason to take Tony back and says that Tony doesn't know about her other options. So then in the next scene, we get to hear more about these other options.
God.
She's agonizing. We see this the whole setup as she composes a message and is agonizing on whether to hit send. Over a message to a guy named Ross, who is another guy she was a prison pen pal with. She says he's the only guy other than Tony that she wanted to be romantic with that she met in prison. She seemed like she was pretty serious about him before he got transferred down to a prison in Louisiana. She talked to Ross through her entire relationship with Tony, and he's out of prison now. They seemed pretty close and said they would email like every day when he was in prison. and she would send him his horoscope every night. Okay. She says she loves Ross and they have a spiritual and mental connection, but he can't give her what he needs, or maybe that's just because she never gave him a try. Ultimately, she hits send on this message asking to get together at some point. And then we see a random cat on the porch. Yay, yes. Random cats. All right. So what do you think? We'll work backwards. What do you think she meant? She said she met his – she they had a spiritual and mental connection, but he didn't have what she needs. What do you think she meant by that?
Quite honestly, I feel like Angela was casting a wide net. and it was one of those things where she's just kind of hedging her bets with having like multiple people in the wings.
Sure.
And my thought is that Tony probably just got released before he did. So these needs are physical needs, right?
Okay.
Like, I need you to physically be here.
Be present.
And so it's kind of like, well, he can't physically be here if, you know, he's still in prison. And then if he also got transferred to Louisiana, she couldn't even visit him anymore. So
right.
She couldn't even get like that FaceTime. So I feel like that's more it. And so now that, you know, Tony's kind of not even out of the picture, but like less of a, okay, this seems like not as shiny and new and trouble. She's just like, okay, well, let's, you know, revisit this as an option because it sounds like Ross is out now. And
yes.
So I feel Agreed. Like that's really the reason, because I wonder if Ross was still in prison, if she would even be entertaining this idea.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I don't think she is. Like, I definitely think what she like, I think you're on board. What she liked most about Tony for a while is the physical presence.
Yes.
Like, someone is here with me,
right.
Which is, I know people fake on it, but that's a nice part of the relationship. Like, that somebody's just here, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't completely make a relationship by any stretch of the imagination, but it's a good, nice chunk of it, right?
Yeah, because I was going to say, and then think about the opposite. If you, like, are trying to not be in a relationship, I guess, like, being not there, right? So
sure.
It's kind of like, it makes sense. You kind of need that presence, but she just seems so desperate to me, like, you know, just has to have someone there. It's like she's incapable of being alone.
Right.
Then I feel like this is the reason why she's making these really terrible decisions.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely like, I just need a warm body near me. That's what
yes.
I need.
Yes. Yes. Any warm body. But okay.
Yeah.
Also the other thing, let's say, for example, that Tony and Ross both had gotten out at the same time. Right. And so then she would really have to decide between the two. I think Angela thinks that Tony is hotter, but she probably had more of a connection with Ross. Because the thing with Tony is that he's just dumb. You know,
yeah.
We talk about this all the time. Like, he does not have, like, intellectual conversations, you know. So I'm going to say that when she talks about Ross, like, having this connection, I feel like she can actually have deeper conversations with Ross. You
right.
Know?
Well, she said the mental and spiritual connection. And that's
yes.
what I was trying to get at the beginning. I
yeah.
was like, is the thing she needs is what he doesn't give her? Is he just not hot? Is she just not that attracted to him physically?
Yeah. Because I was going to say, my personal assessment of the physical like comparison between Tony and Ross, as much as I hate to say this, I think Tony is actually more attractive than Ross, like dumb face and all.
Right.
But at the same time, honestly, I feel like Angela should also be so lucky to get a Ross, you know, like I feel like they're kind of on the same level, like, you know, like there's nothing wrong with it. But OK, and here I know we haven't really seen too much of it in these last two episodes. What the hell is wrong with her? Like, why is she forgetting that Tommy, a normal, educated, decent looking guy who is age appropriate, like he is ready to be there for her,
and obviously someone that she gets along with well because
yes.
they're good friends.
Yes,
yeah.
They're very good friends. It's like, why Angela, like, why are you choosing these options? You have like, and
right.
that's the other
who is,
thing
like,
is like, is she
I
that
mean,
desperate?
I think part of it is I don't think she's down. I think Tommy is too desperate for her. Like, I
yeah.
think she's like, yeah, I think because he's like basically thrown himself at her,
right?
It's like, known as being, I am always an option. I'm right here, right behind you. Here's Tommy. Hey. And that's like really off-putting.
Poor Jerry Springer.
I know.
All right. Moving on to Lamar and Andrea. Tennyson is hanging out with Lamar, and Lamar takes Tennyson to hang out with his side of the family. Lamar is hoping that Tennyson, meeting the extended family, he'll see that there's a village of people who has his back in California. Lamar wants Tennyson to see there's more to California than bums and dope fiends. But then we hear about Dulo, Lamar's brother, who's recently been caught in the crossfire and shot in the foot, but, you know, Dulo, he still feels safe. Dulo lights up a blunt and then passes it to Tennyson, who then passes it back. Tennyson says he's not comfortable and he thinks it's within his rights to leave the room, you know, if a situation like this were to come up, but he doesn't leave the room. Dulo respects Tennyson's stance on weed, and Lamar doesn't even want Andrea to know that, you know, Tennyson's been around it, even though Lamar didn't partake, and he actually kind of stood up for Tennyson and, like, reinforced what he was saying. Because he knows that Andrea would flip out. Okay, then we kind of switch gears a little bit. Andrea is with Nyla at the pharmacy and tries to have an awkward sex talk in the middle of the birth control aisle. And Nyla is having none of it. Andrea then knocks on Nyla and Tennyson's room. And Tennyson calls her out for being all dripped out. Because Andrea is wearing some ridiculous outfit. It was like some kind of jumpsuit with these like stunna shades. Then Nyla recounts the embarrassing birds and bees talk that she had with her mom in the middle of the store. The kids talk about moving back and forth between Utah and California, and Tennyson tells Nyla about his trip to Dulo's house, including the weed incident. Tennyson feels like he just has to tell his mom that he was around it. Nyla suggests, sure, he could tell her, but just in public. All right. So Tennyson didn't do anything wrong.
He did absolutely nothing wrong.
No.
Absolutely
Lamar
nothing wrong.
Lamar did nothing wrong.
Correct. Yes.
Why do you think that Tennyson even has to tell Andrea about this at all when no one did anything wrong that Andrea has any kind of control over or right to be mad at?
Because Tennyson is not a dummy and he knows this is going to be on TV and he knows she's going to flip out about it, right?
Okay.
So, like, daily or whatever, I'm with him. Because if she's ever going to find out about it, mm-hmm. it needs to be from him. Because okay. if it's not from him, that's when he gets in trouble, and that's what he gets in trouble for. Is like, why didn't you tell me about this? And it's like, does he know? We all know. They're all right. Like, Lamar, literally everybody but dumbass Dulo knows that she's going to flip out about this.
Poor Dulo. He's just self-medicating from his gunshot wound.
Listen, okay. Because that's the other thing to remember, too, when we're watching this, is that it's legal where he is, right?
Which is why Dulo asked him if he was 18. Although, right. I think the weed smoking age in California is 21,
it's 21.
Anyway.
Yeah. So, like – yeah, and that's what I thought was funny too when they kept calling it a joint. And I was like, that's a blunt. Like, that is. But, like, I don't know. It seems to me like I was a little bit put off by the production because I feel like even Dulo, right? Every time I've been around anybody who's a big pothead or whatever, usually they'll be like, y'all mind? Before they light it up. They don't just light it up on you, right?
Yeah.
Like, is everybody cool with this? And I'm like, you know, because they'll give you at least the option of being like, actually, nah, can you just wait till we leave? And they'll be like, oh, yeah, cool. I'll do that. Right?
Yeah. Plus, speaking of his blunt, it's like, I feel like he would have to ask because it's like, why would you roll a blunt that gigantic for just you?
For just him. I imagine him smoking that entire thing.
I don't know. Maybe Dulo would.
He had that. He didn't roll it while they were there. That was pre-rolled. That was him up like for it. So, like, I feel like production put him up to that. Like,
oh yeah, for sure. But it was kind of funny to me, not to like, you know, downplay what happened to Dulo, but it's like he got shot in the foot. Like,
I know they made it sound like so rough. Dulo got shot, man. Oh man.
Yeah, and then you're like, oh, he got shot in the foot. No, I get it. That's super freaking scary. And it's like let's be real here. No one wants to get shot in the foot.
No, you
know? Like, you
don't. It's actually my understanding.
Shot
is
at all.
Getting shot is a pleasant place to get shot.
Sure, sure.
But like getting shot in the foot, my understanding is that's actually a really painful place to get shot. Because yeah. of all the bones and stuff that are in there.
Yes, that's what my thought would be. It's like super fragile because of all the bones.
Yeah, I definitely remember listening to, like, when I played football in high school, a lot of my coaches were like vets, and like listening to them talk about all the, they traded stories about the times they got shot. I was like, this is weird, guys. Why are we doing this? But like some of them were like, I didn't even notice it. Like, but that's like when we get taught soft, in like soft tissue and stuff like that.
But
my understanding is foot can actually be really rough, and it because it can not only does it hurt, but it can like jack up a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah,
right. That takes a lot of recovery.
Yeah, I think the reason why I kind of see it as like funny, not funny that you got shot in the foot, but you know, like not as serious, is because it's like no one's dying from a gunshot wound to your foot, and so them all playing up like. You know, oh my God, like, you know, someone we knew got shot. It's kind of like, okay, it is a big deal, but like you're making it seem like he was like on the brink of death.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, it's a different thing because it was also the person who got shot, albeit in the foot, right?
Yeah.
The person who got shot is like telling you, and especially when they're in there, in their house, smoking their blunt, telling you how much safer it is than it used to be. Like, I get their parents. And to be fair, he is 100% right. It is way safer than it used to be.
Sure,
like,
sure.
Despite him still getting shot, right? Like, yeah. It is. Like, if you go back to those same neighborhoods in, like, the 80s and 70s, it was way worse.
Right, right. Yeah. Oh, Dulo.
And we didn't even talk about the birth control stuff. Like, ugh.
Yeah, I just... Yeah,
there was much there. It was just – that was just Andrea being Andrea. That, I feel like that's her – we always have certain people who know to play certain things up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And Andrea being overprotective about sex stuff is definitely her like – that's just play. I just felt like she was playing it up.
I thought it was interesting that she kind of took that route instead of like the abstinence route because that seems to be more of like – her style.
Sure.
But I also then kind of thinking about it a little bit further, it was like it would be super hypocritical for her to have the abstinence talk with Nyla considering they just told them that – what's her face?
Yeah.
The youngest one.
Oh, whatever. Priscilla.
Priscilla. I wanted to call her princess. I was like, that's not right. Priscilla was, you know, born before they got married. So.
Right. Yeah, you're totally with it because I went to Catholic high school. So I got my, you know, education for that. Like, it was definitely one of those things where the only time they mentioned any other type of birth control was just to mention how often it fails. Like, no. Can't trust condoms. Can't trust the pill. Can't trust any of it.
If you have sex, you will get pregnant.
Yes. Yes.
Even though there's only a 5% chance.
Well, who could say? Sarah and Michael. So, in the first scene, Sarah is headed to the gym to meet Emmy, who is listed as her friend, but really seems like a personal trainer, and I was confused.
Oh, we've seen Emmy before. Emmy Have is we? Her friend. Okay. Yes.
But she we was doing personal – she was serving as a personal trainer this time.
Because I think that's what her job is.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Sarah's doing leg presses. And Emmy talks about how good Malcolm is for Sarah. Remember, Malcolm is her new boyfriend. And then they talk about the likelihood of Michael showing up at Rain's birthday party. They also talk about the fact that she invited both Michael and Malcolm to the party and how the plan is for them to meet before the party because that is just the best idea. I don't know if it's the best idea. It's a better idea than them meeting at the party. Emmy is worried, but she knows Malcolm and says – thinks he'll try to defuse any tense situation but it still could be an issue because Michael just might be hard set on starting shit. Next up, we see Michael stopping by his mother's place in Flint on his way to Rochester, which is not on the way to Rochester between Miami and, you know, Rochester for anybody keeping score at home. But he is talking there. You know, he's on his way to Rain's birthday party. He tells us some crazy shit is going down with Maria, who he describes in the past tense. He tells us that she would do stuff like steal his license and his passport and then kept not caring when she got herself or them into situations where somebody might get arrested. And his desire to stay out of jail means that he has ended things with Maria. But while he's talking to his mom, he ignores multiple calls from Sarah before complaining about how she's always keeping him in the dark. He says he'll call her back once he's in New York to ask, just ask, where's the party? Which God. Is obviously not the way Sarah wanted to play it.
Nah.
Then the third scene, we see Sarah talking to her therapist, who was the same therapist we saw last year when they tried couples counseling for an episode. And it's Dr. J. So Dr. J and Sarah talk about how much of a father, or really lack thereof, Michael has been, because the answer is roughly he hasn't been a father at all. At this point, we hear that the party is tomorrow, and Sarah hasn't heard anything from Michael, which makes sense with what Michael said. He's going to call her on the morning of the party and just be like, where should I show up? So she doesn't know if he's coming or when, and at this point, the pre-meeting that she had planned with Malcolm and Michael is off the table. Dr. J said Sarah has a much different, harder energy. She really starts to rant and rave about Michael at this point. And so Dr. J says that Sarah has a much different, harder energy than she used to have. She gets very heated and leaves. But when she does leave, we just hear that she is calling Michael from the car. All right. So that's the end of that. So I don't know. Every week I just like all of these people even less. But, yeah. I don't know. We'll just start with that. Michael ignoring the calls while he's saying, I don't know. She doesn't tell me shit. Ignore.
Michael has issues. Like, he is so bad at communication. And I don't even know if he even realizes how bad he really is. But it's him, you know, because he keeps on saying, like, she just makes it difficult. She just makes it difficult. And, you know, when he was kind of recounting to his mom about the conversation they had about the birthday, he was telling his mom that, you know, like, Sarah, you know, I was asking about the birthday, and then Sarah was like making it all difficult, like, you know, not telling me the details. And, you know, it's like, that's not what happened. We heard that conversation last week. He was beating around the bush asking about the cake, you know?
Right.
So but his interpretation of that was, I was asking her about the birthday party. And it's like, no, that's not what you weren't asking about the logistics. And then Sarah kind of like turned on him and was like, you should be asking about this. And he's like, oh, she's difficult. Like, she like had a reaction to it. So right. It's just like, he is an ineffective communicator. He beats around the bush. He isn't explicit with what he wants. He's not direct. And I think this is part of the reason, like, he thinks he's being direct, but he's not.
Right.
And so, like, their miscommunication, I think, is where this all kind of falls apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it sounds like he had, like, yeah, because it sounded like when he talked to his mom, like, mm-hmm. what he made it sound like is, oh, I had this plan where I was going to take the girls, and
right.
I had my own thing planned, and I would do my own thing, and then she would do hers. And she just shot that down, and she didn't want to have a deal with that. Whereas, again, we saw it again. In reality, he was like, yeah, I thought I was going to bring Maria up and we could, like, do, like, some stuff. She was like, no, absolutely not. We're not bringing Maria up. Like, this is not a thing. Now, she does do that. She does. She is at the point where I will give him, quote unquote, credit because she is at the point where she's like, no, you don't get to be alone with the girls.
Right.
Like, that's off the table. Right. And all he wanted was to be alone with the girls. But I'm with you. His lack of communication is just crazy. He's like, I don't even know what time this party is. It's like, well, did you
Whose
ask?
Whose fault is that?
Whose fault is that? Right? I don't even know where it is yet. I guess but he also is a procrastinator, right? Mm-hmm. I need to know when this party is. When are you going to call? At the last possible moment. Like, that's my plan. My plan right now is I will call her tomorrow on the morning of the party when I'm in Rochester to be like, where should I go and what should I do? And I'm mad you didn't tell me after, again, stressing this, he's ignoring her calls, right?
Right. It's like, oh, God, he's so bad at this communication.
Right, because he just takes everything as a referendum on himself, right? Mm-hmm. So if it's just like, oh, you know, I'm calling you to tell you that I have a new boyfriend and I want you to meet him beforehand, so I need you to get here early. I need you to get here early. He's just like, oh. It's like a teenager or a kid. Oh, why are you making me do stuff? No, I don't want to deal with that. And so he just puts it off to the last possible moment.
I think also, like, him leaving it to the last possible moment is kind of his way of kind of getting his way, you know?
Yes.
Like, because if he answered and they got in a fight or something, and then she says, just don't come, you're not welcome. you know. Uh-huh. But if he doesn't do it till last minute, and then he'll be like, well, I'm already here. Like, what can you do about it?
Right.
You know, so I don't know. There are things that he needs to, like, socially, I don't know, like, learn things. It's like he is just really going to be bad at relationships until he kind of learns how to communicate with people.
Right, right. And very, like, direct. And the thing is, you're right, he beats around the bush all the time. Because mm-hmm. It wasn't even clear, like, why did you break up with Maria? I don't know. She was doing a lot of stuff. Like, stuff where I get arrested. I was like, what do you mean? How is she getting you arrested? Like, let's actually
go back and revisit that.
Let's get a full thought out of that. Let's revisit that.
Yeah. I'm not surprised that him and Maria are broken up. I think Maria is surprised. Like, that's her soulmate. It's like,
yeah. She was like, we're already married. Remember, she was like, we're already married
in our minds.
Yeah, we're married in our minds. It's done deal. Because I definitely can see, after what we saw, you know, last year with Sarah, mm-hmm. I could totally see going to a club with Maria and she's going to get in a fight with somebody.
Oh,
and
yeah, then
bring it outside. Sure. And Michael's like, no, we cannot have the police here. What are you doing?
Right. Yeah. Maria's definitely rough around the edges. So I think, like, Sarah, I think, doesn't know that Maria is out of the picture at this point.
Right.
So I definitely feel like this whole Malcolm situation is going to escalate because Michael, he's incapable of being on his own. He's got to have a girl on the back burner. And right now, I don't know if Sarah is the one on the back burner because I kind of feel like he would be accepting the calls and trying to sweet talk her if that was the case.
That's true. But I definitely think he's not going to be able to handle him not having someone and her having someone. Sure. That's not right. going to go over.
Yeah, that's true. He doesn't like his options being taken away from him.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to Shane and Lacey. And it really is just Shane and Lacey at this point. Lacey is back to living with Shane. They have the kids crawling all over Shane as he tells us he's doing pretty well. He's doing all the things he needs for his probation. And, you know, they're just enjoying their home life. Lacey feels like she has her family back. Lacey then calls her friend Miranda to talk about quarantine, including homeschooling her kids, which apparently isn't going so hot. She then drops a bomb that she has started IVF. She is eligible for a study because she's previously had her tubes tied, which gives them a $6,000 discount. Lacey admits that the only reason she's going through with this IVF is so Shane can have at least one child of his own. And she believes that having this child will bring them all closer together.
Oh, yeah. Oh my goodness.
Another Band-Aid baby.
Yeah. So many levels. So right. many levels.
So like, they definitely in this episode try to like make it look like, you know, they're a one big happy family again.
Right.
So are you believing this? That everything is all good on the home front?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Like, and it just seems like so – because I feel like if you're rushing into the baby – right? They're rushing into the baby.
That really is the Band-Aid baby.
Yeah, that really is the Band-Aid baby. There's mm-hmm. something there that you think is going to get solved by the baby, mm-hmm. right? Especially because Shane, it's not like this is Shane's last chance to ever have a baby. He's like 22. God, I know. You know, like he's super young. Like, yeah. And the idea of it, like, oh, we can't possibly wait. We can't, like, I get like, yeah, this study is here now. Mm-hmm. And you have a $6,000, but like, I feel like you could wait like 4 or 5 years down the road and still be like in the zone where everybody's comfortable having a baby. Like,
yeah.
And so, especially when it's like all those kids, there's a lot of kids there.
Yeah. They have three, I think.
Three little ones, right?
Yes, three. Yes. That is the thing is that they're young.
Yeah.
I want to say they're all under 7.
Right. And I just, I look at that and I hate to say it with the thing, but the money, yeah. They're broke. They don't have any money. Like,
She's still cam girl in it,
I think. She still has her cam girl money, I suppose. Yeah, I'm just thinking about Shane's, like, dock worker job.
Right, but I mean, they're not even living off of that at all. You know?
Yeah.
Like, that's all extra money at this point.
I just know so many people that are better off financially, way better off in terms of their relationship, way better off in terms of, like, I want to say as they are as people, but like, you know, in terms of like what they're capable of and what their skill set is and things like that, that really, really struggle with four kids, right? It's like you have all, everything, like you check all the boxes on, are you going to be able to take care of four kids? And it's still hard as hell. Four kids is a lot.
It is. It's so many. I know.
Because you're not even four kids. Like a lot of times when you have four kids, like one of them is like old enough to being like they could take care of one of the other ones.
Yeah, help.
Right? Yeah. Like I feel like everybody I know who had four kids or like at least in my generation now that I'm thinking about it, like the oldest one is like 10 or 11 and then the youngest one's born, right? It's not like the oldest one is like six and I have four underneath of that. That's crazy. That's so old. It's unimaginable. I'm trying to think about doing that. And I'm like, oh my God, let alone 22-year-old Shane. Oh my God.
Oh gosh. I know. Shane's so young. But he does seem like he's good with the kids.
I guess he does. But I don't know. But
it's easy to be good with the kids if all you're doing is being the fun uncle type.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Yeah. Well, how much is he actually like all doing the kids and how much is he just coming in and being like, let's play football and run on the trampoline. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. True. All right. So I think that's all of them, right?
That's everybody. Yep.
Okay. So what about your student of the week?
I went with Tennyson, right?
Okay.
For handling the situation appropriately, right? Because, you know, he was just like, oh, no, no thanks, that's not me. But, like, he probably went a little bit too hard. But I don't know if you've ever seen, like, the people who were like, no, drugs are bad. And I was like, be cool, dude. Like, it's okay. You don't have to smoke the blunt, but be cool.
Right. You don't need to, like, shame other people.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But and also, I was saying, for recognizing, like, the people around him and knowing that like his mother is going to flip out and he probably needs to tell her because or else the flip out is going to be located. It's going to be aimed at him rather than aimed right now. It's probably going to be aimed incorrectly at Lamar.
Right.
Cause it really should be aimed at Dulo, but she's going to be like, how dare you take him to a situation where this would happen? Cause Lamar was like, no, we're not doing that. No.
Right. So that's actually funny. You should say that because my student of the week was Lamar because he stuck up for Tennyson and he was like, nah, like that's, you know, our family doesn't do that. You know, like, yeah. So it's kind of like, I think it's easier for someone like Tennyson to, you know, make that kind of peer pressure decision, you know, if we're thinking back on our dare days, when you have like an adult figure kind of backing you up, right?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. All
okay,
right.
What about your dunce?
I went with Angela, right? Because this is the first we heard of Ross, yes? Right? I missed one of the seasons with her or like early.
No, this is the first time
we've heard Ross. So yeah, just kind of pull out this guy she's had on the back burner time she's been on this relationship. That's not cool.
Actually, that's funny because I had put in my notes like Angela is also a garbage person. Like,
right.
You know, she definitely gets the edit where she is the victim. Uh-huh. But it's kind of like, yeah, but at the same time, she has her own issues.
She totally does. And because she loves this guy. Like,
God.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, but you're married to somebody else. Like,
well, kind of, but not really.
Well, you are.
Thankfully, she's not actually married to him.
Right. Because she didn't file the
certificate. Which good for her. Because I think she was saying like, and that's kind of weird, like she was going to do it right after the wedding. But I thought you were supposed to get your marriage certificate before. Or is it like some kind of before or after buffer?
You have to get it before, but then file it after the officiant has signed it.
Oh, okay. I see. So she probably just did the filing part.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes more sense then. All right. So my dunce, I actually said Sarah. Like, the therapy session, she was just losing her shit. And, you know, I just kind of felt like, don't ever call someone when you are that worked up and emotional, because that is not going to be a productive conversation or argument. You know, she got on the phone with Michael and immediately starts screaming at him. Like, what does she expect to accomplish with that?
Right. So, I mean, there's always issues with the therapy stuff, right? Because we know that those sessions aren't a real therapy session because
right.
I'm pretty sure they would take your license away very quickly if you're like live filming your patients.
Yeah.
Right. The actual therapy session, right? But I was not like, this is not a good advertisement for Dr. J, the therapist, who just like
lets her go when she's that emotional. Yeah. Yeah.
And like go like take it to like level 11. I'm like, isn't your therapist supposed to like rein this in and like, let's reconsider this. How about we center ourselves? Mm-hmm. Like instead of just like, oh yeah, you seem really mad. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes,
keep getting
go.
Mad. Yeah. You're totally right in this. Like
go walk it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Get out of it
with your phone. Yeah. To call this guy. Like that's just, I'm not like a Dr. J as a therapist.
Right. Right. Okay. What about your life lesson?
All right, so I actually have a double one. One's really short, but they're both to Shane and Lacey.
Okay.
One, take your shoes off on the trampoline.
Oh, God.
You're supposed to wear shoes on the trampoline. That's how you get ripped. Okay.
Okay.
Two.
I didn't know that, so that's a good life lesson.
It was funny because I was like, listen, when we used to have like – I didn't really partake, but in my – like when we go to like the house parties in high school and everybody be like, you know, sloshed going out to the trampoline to jump on it, we took off our shoes then. Like, so you know to take off your shoes. A bunch of drunk high schoolers know how to take off their shoes. You should be able to take off your shoes. But no, more of it was like wanting to have a kid just so one of the kids has your DNA.
Yeah.
That's not a good reason. This kind of goes back to Angela and Michael,
90 Day Fiancé.
Yeah, that's not a good reason to have a kid. And like, so that was my other one. Just like, yeah, you need a better reason for a kid than I want one of them to have my genes.
It's like almost like anchor baby, you know?
Yeah.
Like you really belong to this family because you have a baby.
Right. I mean, it definitely, and when you have a baby specifically so one of the kids will have your genes, that like speaks to me like, oh man, I feel like he's going to favor that kid. Like, is that kid going to get special treatment? Like, this is the one that's really mine. Like, I don't like that. That's, if you're going to raise the kids and you're going to be their dad, you have to be their dad.
From Lacey's perspective, it's like kind of like trap baby, you know? It's like if she gets a kid that's actually his, then he will feel obligated to stay. You
know,
whereas
that works so well for her with the other kids.
Uh-huh. I know, right? Whereas now, like if he leaves, it's like he doesn't feel that obligation because none of the kids are his. You know, so I think that's where she's coming from. Not saying it's right, but I mean, in weird Lacey logic, I think that's what's going on.
All the Lacey logic is weird. All right, your life lesson?
My life lesson. So this goes to Andrea. Don't ever have sex talks with your kids in really public places. I think she's really kind of creating a space where she is embarrassing her kids and they're just not going to feel safe and,
totally.
You know, to talk to her about the more serious things like ever, because, you know, it's like if she's always kind of embarrassing them, you know, it's like Nyla isn't going to go to her to talk about, you know, sex stuff later because she's just like, I don't want to have this uncomfortable conversation with my mom. She's going to make a big deal about it.
And not even that it would be uncomfortable, but I know she's going to flip out and be all
and
dramatic.
Be embarrassing.
And it's going to be about her. And like, Yeah, so imagine when Nyla gets to the point where she's like, I'd like to go on birth control. Could you imagine that conversation? Oh my God.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So I kind of feel like this is where you like kind of create this wall between you and your kid, you know?
Right.
And it's like you always want your kids to have like – feel like they can come to talk to you. Mm-hmm. And I feel like by – I don't know if she was doing it intentionally to like embarrass Nyla by having this loud conversation in the middle of the pharmacy. And I almost feel like she kind of was doing it to kind of embarrass her, partially for the cameras and I think partially to like shame her into – you know, like being abstinent in a weird way.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And it's just kind of like that's not nurturing the kind of relationship where Nyla feels comfortable coming to you.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely – I mean we've talked, you know, offline about, you know, things about, you know, feeling shame and guilt associated with sex all the time. And that's not cool. It doesn't it doesn't give you a healthy relationship with it when you grow up.
Right. Right. Yeah, definitely. Okay. So that pretty much wraps up this episode. So this was episode 2 of 4 for our Life After Lockup weird intermission.
Yeah, the interlude, the Life After Lockup interlude, yes.
Right, before Love After Lockup starts up again and we kind of finish off the season. So we'll be back here same time next week.
Yep.
All right. See you then.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, bye. Good.